Cheltenham and say hi to Maurice Misolowski, who is in Melbourne. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Absolutely. Happy Tuesday to you, Maurice. What is cooking?
More of unusual stuff from the future.
Okay.
So this week I thought we'd have a look at a perennial, but something that we've never really conquered, and that's energy sources.
Yeah.
Lots of conversations around that, I'm sure, around the world, just like in Australia. Every day almost in the media is some kind of energy issue. We don't have enough. We have too much. We're polluting. We're doing all kinds of bits and pieces. Why can't we find something different? And one of the ones that's been talked about forever, I think literally ever since we were put on this planet, has been the good old solar, looking at the sun and saying, gee whiz, it's big, it's bright, it's hot.
And it's so logical to do
it. Isn't
it? Yeah. It's quite funny, though. I mean, simply speaking, when you hear about communities around the world adopting solar energy, there's always the big industries on the take. The local electric company, I'll have some of that.
Yeah.
You can't just put some panels up on your roof and, you know, live a healthy life forever for free, can you?
Well, you can't. You're not allowed to. It's verboten, as they say. It's forbidden. So it seems really easy, though. The thing's up there in the sky. Thankfully, it's up there every day. Sometimes it's cloudy and we can't really see it and we can't, you know, it's not all that effective, but it's there. And it's been used forever and ever. There's been evidence that it was it used as a fire starter. Obviously because of its ability to, it's just up there. So one of the conversations in the past week or so, and it's been obviously been built for a while, but there was a press release by Nissan, the car company Nissan,
right,
who have said something that many of others said before, but it always gets a really good rouse in the press, and that is that they think that they might be on to solar-powered motor vehicles.
You'd think they would have had that thought, like, in the 80s. I'm sure they did, probably.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it just sounds so obvious. The roof's there. It's on the car. It's facing upwards. The sun should be able to beat down on it. And why can't we do it? It seems simple, but really it's nothing. It's nothing could be further from the truth.
Go on,
it really
then.
Is.
Because that is,
it
you know,
really
like I'm getting it now.
Difficult.
It's an obvious question to ask. Well, how come you can't just plug in and off you go? That's a logical question.
Yeah, because it would make sense for you to do it. As I said, it just seems so obvious that it should be able to power itself as it goes. Look, there's a number of ways we can look at this thing. We have a lot of the boffins, a lot of the Nissans and people that want this thing to work saying that this could be an energy source that could run forever. Obviously, you've got a car, it's moving around, there's a bit of sun, so you should just be able to keep going and going and going. There are car manufacturers that claim that they have already worked out a way for this solar energy by itself with nothing else to run between 700 kilometres on a tank, so to speak, so the range of it. There's a company in the Netherlands called Lightyear Zero.
This is based on the fact that we're now running a lot of electric cars, right, or battery cars.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So this is pure solar. This is no battery as we know it. I mean, obviously there is, but not in the sense that's electric powered. This is 100% by the sun. It claims that it can do a range of about 700 kilometres. And when it comes down to it, that car, Lightyear, can really only do about 50 k's a day purely from the sun, 100% sun, nothing else. There's a company called Aptera in the USA that has a three-wheeler fully solar car, claims also a range of about 1,600 kilometres with sun, but again claims that if you're just using sun, which seems like, you know, a bit silly because that's what this thing is sold for, you must probably can only get 30-40 k's a day maximum out of this thing. So everybody, well, not everybody, lots of car manufacturers are saying they have a solution to this thing. We have a solar panel. But if you truly fair dinkum, to use an Australian term, just want the sun, want no electricity, no gas, no oil, no nothing else, just you got to be somewhere where there's a lot of sunlight, like Australia.
Like the middle of Australia. I mean, that's crazy, isn't it?
And that's a problem because all of them claim that really, really in their heart of hearts, if you just went solar, nothing else, you could only most probably get about 40 k's a day maximum pushing downhill in a car.
Yeah.
And there's your problem.
Yeah. So what to do? It's interesting. What drew you onto this, by the way? Just Nissan's announcement.
I've been following this story for years and years and years. Whenever there's a new energy source or one of these little boffins who come out and say, we think we've solved or resolved the energy crisis, you know, use our new whatever, whether it's wind or solar or kinetic or whatever, I start that with the biggest grain of salt I can find, because firstly, I think it's wrong. I think it's silly that we're all just looking for one single source of energy for anything.
Well, they're there. Maybe we're looking for them, but they are all there, aren't they?
But we should be using a mixture form. And, you know, solar energy was probably a really good conversation for Australia and some other places, because we have a lot of sunlight. It makes sense. But in countries where it's cold, if you go to Canada, if you go to parts of America, if you go to places where there is very little sun throughout the year, consistently, I'm not talking about ever, but consistently through the year, because we want our car to work every day, it's not really a forever everywhere type of fuel, but it will work in one position.
Yeah.
And we should be looking then at gas for others, we should be looking at diesel for others, keeping petrol. I think we're only ever going to resolve this if we get sensible and say we need to mitigate all the issues we have. Of course we do, with all the ecology and everything else, global warming. Of course we need to be careful and mindful.
Yeah.
But we can't go to a single source energy. It just hasn't ever worked for us. And now that we use more and more energy in more and more places, it's never going to work for us.
So it's interesting that whenever conspiracy theorists get cracking on things like solar energy, there's going to be this thing about the petrochemical industry won't allow it. I mean, where do you go with that kind of theory?
Oh, I know the answer to that one really well, because I spent a great deal of time with them looking at this very issue. The reality is that it's not that they won't allow it. It's the reality that we just don't want it. I know everyone's saying, yes, we do. But the infrastructure for the normal petrol, oil, gas, whatever we call it, depending on which country it is, but it's the same thing. The infrastructure for that is almost 100 years old. There are petrol stations everywhere, cars built for it, mechanics that can fix it, oils that we can buy to make our motor. There are just so many things that make the engine run in every sense of the word, physically and metaphorically, that it's really difficult to dismantle that entire industry and replace it with anything else quickly. It just can't happen overnight.
Is this stuff you're talking about today essentially Australia-focused? I mean, makes sense.
No, it's really across the world, because we're all having the same conversations about can we find a better energy source. I throw into this conversation whenever I talk to clients or audiences about it as well, that we are assuming that our energy needs into tomorrow are the same as they have been in the past, and that's absolutely not true. It's absolutely not true, because we don't use cars in the same way we once did.
No.
In Australia, it was quite common for a house. I don't know how you cut a car in half, but I'm going to give you the stat of 2.5 cars for every house on average.
Mm.
Because you just couldn't move far. They were relatively cheap. A car, that is, petrol was relatively cheap. It was the great Australian dream of every child when they turned 18, 16 or 17, depending on the year and which state they live in, that they would own their motor vehicle and they would have freedom.
Mm.
Kids today do not want a license in the same way that I did, because they have mobility. They have Uber, they have mates, they have all kinds of things. They
just paradigm city, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So it's really necessary that we think about tomorrow's world rather than yesterday's world when we're trying to fix this. I've had conversations for the last 15 years. I'm going to start another one in about 3 weeks' time with a very, very large client, not large client of mine, but a large company in Australia that builds a lot of infrastructure. They build the freeways. They build literally all of the things the planes land on.
Yep.
They build the bridges. They do all that kind of stuff. And they have forever and ever. Very big, very reputable, wonderful, wonderful company. And I've had that conversation with them for about 15 years, as I say, that we're building highways that are 6 lanes, 8 lanes, 10 lanes wide. But for a world that will, in 15, 20 years, most probably have autonomous vehicles that literally sit behind each other and ride really close to each other, and we really won't need 6 lanes in that period of time. I know we have to get there from here. I understand pragmatism and being sensible and the rest of it. But my conversation, and this is not about them because they agree with this.
Yeah.
The conversation is that governments, remembering that any piece of infrastructure that's large, apart from China, which does it so wonderfully well, it literally builds it within a year or 2 years. In Australia, a bridge or a piece of road, a new piece of road, can take 10, 15 or 20 years from the idea to driving on it.
You mentioned roads, and I dropped a little penny as you did. What about using kinetic energy and road surfaces and stuff as an accumulator or a source of energy?
Yes, and that's been talked about quite a bit too in the past, and I like that. I think it's a really, really good
possibility. How would that work, Maurice, to your knowledge?
So, again, in China, there are some roads that already work on that. All these things are prototypes. There's a piece of road in America that does it. There's a piece of road, I think, in the Netherlands that does it. And what I mean by that is, of course, you need the right car, which is why it's only a piece of road, yeah? This is really prototype stuff. But it works a number of ways. So depending on which country and which prototype they're trialing, some of those roads are actually solar panels, not like the ones we have on our roof, but they're built so that the energy from the sun comes down into the road.
Right.
Think about how hot our bitumen gets when we drive on it.
That's what I mean.
There's a lot of energy going onto that from the sun, and it collects it rather than just dissipates it. So it actually collects it, and then the cars that drive on it are built in such a way that they can collect the energy as they drive on it, and through kinetic energy, they obviously replenish the engine and they keep driving. So that's one. There are other ways that it does it as well. Some of them actually have electricity built into the road. I know that sounds strange. You don't get electrocuted when you walk on it. They're, of course, built very differently from that type of horrible approach.
Mm.
But what they do is the wheels of the car, the actual tyres and the wheels, as they go round, they collect the energy from these roads, again, kinetic energy, and they push it back into the motor vehicle. And as you said, another attempt is kinetic energy, which is like our old-fashioned watches that we used to have. Every time you moved your wrist without even knowing it, your watch was wound a little bit more. As our cars move, it should be able to recharge itself and, of course, must probably have a secondary fuel as well for those times when that doesn't work.
I've seen pictures of roads somewhere, like Germany, somewhere funky like that, where they do this kind of thing. I mean, again, Australia has such wide expanses of road. That would be good, wouldn't it?
Well, it would, but you need, again, the infrastructure, you need the government, you need the cars to be built, of course, that will travel on that. You know, it's chicken and egg, which one comes first? Do we build the road? Do we wait for the cars? If we have the cars, we're not going to build the road.
Mm.
So there are all these things. And you really have to prove the technology to make it worthwhile to build all that infrastructure that goes with it.
Mm.
We're talking a lot about electric vehicles across the planet, but sales of them have really diminished in the last year
since
COVID. In the last year, yes, sales, not production, sales have diminished dramatically.
All my driver friends say that China is trying to give them away. They've got all these great finance deals and they take in your old banger and da da da. They're very, very keen to get these on the road, aren't they?
They absolutely are, and because China does electric cars really well, it's one of the best places in the world to have them built. Because America is still behind, Australia doesn't have any manufacturing.
And because they don't like Elon Musk.
Yeah, because China's really big into it. And
yeah,
in Australia, we have 9 Chinese brands, electric vehicles, and growing. The difficulty is we don't have the appetite to buy them.
What about the charging, Maurice? I mean,
that's the big problem.
That's not developed as much as the cars, is it?
No, because. Hmm. Everyone has this range fear. I don't know why, but when we have a normal motor vehicle, our petrol tank will get us between 400 and maybe 800 kilometres, and we know we can refuel at a petrol station somewhere. But for some reason, with this electric, we all go a bit berserk and say, unless I'm travelling a little, just doing cities, it's not really worth my while having electric because there's nowhere to charge.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you're quite right. Once you go through your fuel tank, you will say, I know I'm going to run out, so let's find a gas station. But, as I just said, does that mean that the availability in general of chargers isn't quite up there with gas stations?
No, nowhere near it. Absolutely nowhere near it. In Australia, it is abysmal. It is really hard to find charging stations in the quantity that we would need to say that this makes absolute sense and most people should have it. We also have huge taxes on electric vehicles. We don't know why, but we do. There's an impost there the government keeps talking about. Our cars, when you buy a car, about 40%, maybe more than 40% of the average motor vehicle cost, buying it from a dealership in Australia, goes towards taxes in one way or another. And on top of that, we put then this electric car tax, which they're talking about taking off, has been taken off, but really hasn't been taken off.
Mm.
It's very expensive and very difficult in Australia to have an electric car, I think, unless you are absolutely determined to want to have it.
Okay. And more people, well, they're coming round to it. I mean, about determined. It might be more cost-effective for them with families and all that stuff.
They are, but sales are diminishing. What we've gone through is this big uptake after COVID and during COVID where people thought they wanted an electric vehicle and it was a really good thing. So those people have bought their car already. We're now into those that are still thinking about it and those that are changing over from existing electric vehicles. What we have are literally, there was an article in yesterday's paper, tens of thousands of electric vehicles sitting in warehouses that have been shipped to Australia that have not moved since they got off the boat.
You know, they're huge here. Actually, it's really growing here. Maybe that is the difference. That's quite interesting.
So we're seeing lots of ads on our TV, lots of ads in our press and on social media for brands which are pushing and promoting electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a huge appetite to sell them. The government makes noises like we should be buying them. There are more stations going up to charge them.
Yeah.
But it's still not a paradise here to own one. It's still very difficult. You really have to want it.
So what's going to happen then? This is news. This is quite interesting. I thought they were on the up and up worldwide, but... what do you think is next then if these things are taking up warehouses?
I'm absolutely sure we'll have electric. I'm just not convinced we'll ever see pure electric. Oh. I think what we'll stay with is the hybrid, where we have a mixture of two fuels at least on board so that when one doesn't work as efficiently as the other one kicks in quite easily and you can move between the two. So I think for the next foreseeable future, probably 10, 15 years or so, most cars that most people will buy will be some kind of a hybrid between electric and gas or petrol or fuel, depending on where you live and what you call it. Yeah. More likely to be that than a solo source.
I think I don't really know sort of average incomes and stuff in Australia, but some people here have money to burn and you see some pretty flashy cars around the place and a lot of them are electric, but it does very much come down to what's in people's pockets, doesn't it, what they drive?
It does, and we talk a lot in our press, because we drive vast distances, Australia is so large, that if you are not city-bound like I am, in other words, do very little driving, then electric makes perfect sense. But even if you live in the outer suburbs, so you're doing maybe 50, 60 k's one way to get to work and 50 k's the other way, picking up the kids, going to sports, doing those kinds of things, it's not impossible for many Australian drivers to do over 100, 120, 150 k's a day.
Mm.
It quickly adds up. Just on a normal day-to-day activity. If you take the average range of a car, about 400 Ks, I know it sounds like you should be able to get 3-4 days out of it, but for an average family that's just relying on electric, it's a difficult sell. It's normally the second car or the lesser-used car that tends to be electric, or somebody doesn't drive a lot but wants electric because they think that's a very sound and wonderful thing to have.
Well, we got from your article to this, which was bound to happen, morrisfuturist.com. The article is called Beyond the Plug, What Solar Roofs on Cars Teach Us About Our Failure to Think Broadly. Again, very inspiring piece. Good think piece that, Morris. So well done. Hopefully catch up with you next week at a similar time.